Hello, everyone. Welcome to my talk, Changing Old Habits, Meetup's Path to SRE. My name is Rich Shea, and I'm a core engineering manager at Meetup. Oops. I've been at Meetup for almost 10 years. I've seen Meetup go from a smallish company to the larger one it is today. In case any of you don't know Meetup, it's a site for local interest groups, such as moms groups, dogs groups, and running groups. I organize a Meetup group myself, which is one of the largest running teams in New York City, the Dashing with Its running team. If you'd like to chat about running marathons after this talk, I'd be glad to do so with you. So, it's the end of SRECon 2017, and you're probably asking yourself, what a great 2 days, what have you learned these last 2 days, and when you get back to your company, what are you gonna focus on? So I wanna take a quick poll and get a sense of who's in this room. Who here is at a company with a well-established SRE team? Okay, and who here is just starting to do SRE at their company? Cool, and who here has no SRE team at their company and they came here to learn how to do so? Cool, a couple of you guys. So I was actually in the same place last year. Meetup had no SRE team, and I went to SRECon 2016 to learn ideas and best practices from the smartest people in the industry. And I came up with this list, and I decided to focus on three of these best practices. And they were defect escalation, playbooks, and postmortems. So how did I bring these three best practices into Meetup? For the next 15 minutes, I'll cover two parts: getting buy-in, aka convincing upper management. Part two, changing habits, and focusing on these habits to get you moving toward SRE best practices. So I quickly want to go over how Meetup was in 2015. We had product engineers on one side and systems engineers on another side, kind of working in separate silos. And no one was thinking about how to optimize the communication between these teams. Developers didn't have operational responsibility, so there was kind of like the throw-over-the-wall mentality. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with that. And systems was constantly asking for help from the developers when issues arose with features that they built. So how could we bridge these teams together? At this point, I hadn't heard of SRE until a coworker had mentioned it. I was like, what is this SRE thing all about? And wait, I already do on-call. I'm a developer, and I like to help systems. And I like our platform to be reliable. So I decided to try to convince my boss to do this. So part one, getting buy-in. So there's three parts to getting buy-in. There is the job description, the 6-month roadmap, and the exit strategy. So first up of getting buy-in is the job description, as I said. And with the job description, you basically need to answer these questions. What exactly would you be doing? And for me, how would this role fit within Meetup? And how do these expectations actually match up with those people who expect of me, specifically my manager and the CTO. So I got that job description approved, and I decided to create this 6-month roadmap. And as you can see, in each month of this roadmap, I had an overarching theme. So in July, it was start doing things. In August, it was create SRE best practices at Meetup. Within each month, I had this theme and number of focuses and the expected output from that focus. So let's dig into July. So I had this theme of start doing SRE-ish things, and the first thing I wanted to focus on was creating a process to address on-call issues that happened through our product health board, which is basically a rebranding of tech debt. Expected output was actually eliminating one or more of these repeating on-call issues. In the second part, I focused on having one-on-one conversations with stakeholders. And this proved important later on when I actually started implementing these SRE-ish things. This last part, the third step, is the exit strategy. And this step might not make much sense. It's like, why build something where you're going to abandon it anyways? The point here was to make sure if I decided to move on to other things, they would force me to make sure that SRE best practices was instilled in other teams. And this also ensured that I ended well, made sure I didn't encounter any bad feelings or any resistance to me stepping out of SRE. So now I had a plan in place. Both the plan and the job description and the roadmap were done, and they were approved. So now it's time to execute it. So moving on to part two, changing old habits. So that'll be fun to talk about what habits are. Oxford Dictionary defines it as a settled or regular tendency or practice, especially one that is hard to give up. And individually, I'm sure we're all able to think of a bunch of our own habits. And I'm sure you can think of more bad habits than good habits that you have. How about when you're trying to change those bad habits? It was probably really hard to change that bad habit, right? And there's a reason for the saying that old habits die hard. But let's talk about how habits form and how we change them. So there's this book called Power of Habit, and it talks about this experiment done with mice. And the scientists, they set up this maze, and there was chocolate at the end. I don't know why it was chocolate. I didn't know mice like chocolate. I thought they liked cheese. But anyways, that's besides the point. When the gate clicked open, the mouse would run through the maze looking for this piece of chocolate. They could smell it. So the first time they went through, they were kind of sniffing around. They took wrong turns. They went kind of slow. But as they repeated this experiment, gradually they sped through the maze without stopping. And they analyzed the brain activity in the mice's brains. And in this section called the basal ganglia, the part of the brain that stores routines and chunks of actions, they could see that the brain activity lessened as the mouse went through the same steps over and over again. It was as if the actions became second nature. And we might be familiar with this, comparing the first time we do things with repeated times we do things. Tying your shoe is an example, or driving your car. Of course, because this is SRE Con, answering a page at 3 a.m. in the morning, I'm sure that's become a habit for you. However, this kind of sounds like it's just training and practice. What makes something a habit is actually this habit loop. So this is kind of what I need to focus on in my talk. So it also talks about, in this book, The Power of Habit, the three parts of a habit. And they are the cue, the routine, and the reward. So if you look at the last experiment, we have the cue, which is the door clicking open, the routine, which is the maze, running through the maze, and the reward is the piece of chocolate. And here it is more generally. But how do you actually change this habit? So if you think back on that one bad habit that you have, and you think about something that you've successfully changed, what were the steps that you took to actually change that habit? So this is my bad habit. Every time I get ready for bed, I actually check my cell phone, and I check Facebook and Instagram. And to me, the reward is like a distraction. And I'm not going to bed just yet. So it's hard to get rid of this routine outright, since the reward is hard to change, and the cue, obviously, I have to go to bed. So what you do is replace the routine. So instead, read a book instead. So why do personal habits matter to a large organization? Because once individual habits become so ingrained, it affects the company as a whole. It also makes it impossible to make the bigger changes. Also, most of us are engineers. We don't like process. You can't just implement new process. So think of smaller habits to change can get you to those bigger changes. So this is a tool that you can use to make more systematic changes to reach SRE. In other words, to implement new processes, first focus on changing individual habits. So I'm going to go through three habits that Meetup had. So this is habit number one. So this is probably a familiar scenario. An email or tweet arrives regarding an issue on your site that's affecting your users. So how do you determine that this is an actual issue? Back when I started at Meetup, the company was pretty small. We were pretty close-knit, and there was only 42 people. It was easier to just have a casual conversation, determine what was up. However, as the company grew, everyone started using different ways to communicate. So a few of the scenarios was there was one-on-one chats that were happening. People were basically just talking face-to-face to whoever's nearby, or people were just using a myriad of different Slack channels. And this whole time, they were basically wasting time to just answer the question of, does this issue need to get fixed? Meetup didn't have a single process at this point. And as a small company, you know, as I said, this was fine, but now we're over 150 people. So looking deeper at this problem and looking for a solution, I actually found allies in community experience and the project management teams, which is pretty cool. So the bad habit here was actually people were using back channels when communicating breakage. They weren't doing it intentionally. But I think a lot of people just want to be sensitive to people's time and avoid creating distractions. So what we needed to do was make it OK to bother lots of people when there is a critically, when there is a potentially critical issue. So to normalize this behavior, we changed the habit of who to go to ask if something needed to get fixed. So instead of having multiple ways of communicating breakage, we narrowed it down to just one path. So simply it's use the Slack channel engineering, and if it's after hours, use at on-call. So now the process is clear, it's simpler, and we push to make these conversations happen in the open. And we also emphasize it was okay to bother people for these critical issues. Because less time is spent looking for owner of an incident, we can get to the issue more quickly and fix it. So in summary, the cue was the email and the tweet. The answer to the question was, is this a critical issue? The bad habit was using all these different back channels to communicate. And the good habit was just using this engineering channel. This allowed us to implement a straightforward way to do defect escalation, and also helped us with better communication and transparency in the company. So habit number two. So how many of you read the book Phoenix Project? So there's this guy named Brent in it. I'm sure you can think of a Brent in your company. So we had a lot of Brents in our company at this point. And Brent, if you haven't read the book, Brent is the go-to ops engineer in the book. He's the guy who knows how to fix stuff. And no one else knows how to fix what he knows how to fix. So Meetup was in a similar situation. And we were relying on certain people to fix things. And it wasn't intentional, again. It was just because these people were fast and really good at their job. So the habit we're trying to fix here is stop relying on a single engineer to fix this incident. So we can't exactly stop Brent from fixing things. But what we can do is stop asking Brent to fix these things. And you know, what if Brent, this engineer, wasn't around? Or worse yet, what if he left? In this situation, documentation becomes really important. We need multiple people to be responsible for the same thing. But how do we introduce the habit of trying to fix things ourselves? So what we did was we added rules for incidents that required playbooks. So basically, we had this weekly on-call production status meeting. And we focused primarily on repeating incidents. And we got any engineer to actually document the steps and create a playbook. So here it is again, this diagram I showed. The cue is the incident, and the reward is issues fixed. The bad habit was consistently asking the same engineer to fix the same issue, same issues. The better habit, the good habit, is stop asking that engineer and instead document the steps so anybody can fix it. So we added a process so that repeated incidents would require playbooks. And this also helped other engineers in the company know what issues were happening on the site. And so this helped with collaboration and knowledge sharing. Habit number three. So something broke and someone fixes it. So someone took responsibility for what happened, and that's great. They fixed it and they learned from their mistake. But who else actually knew what happened? So one person fixes it, and one person learns from this mistake. Without sharing knowledge, we can't actually learn as a team from this mistake. And engineering teams aren't just teams of one. So the first step is just acknowledging that this isn't just one person's fault. We start to look at breakages as learning opportunities for the entire team. We can actually start to identify factors outside of the engineer's control that could have caused the issue. In other words, we're all in this together. And this new habit was framed around this new mentality. So let's figure out how things went wrong together and improve as a team. So, probably already figured it out, but this was the first step to get to postmortems. And remember that escalation process in habit number one? We made sure that every critical or major defect had a postmortem. We made sure these defects were actually visible in a Slack channel called postmortems, and facilitators would actually schedule postmortems with the teams. And the facilitators would meet with the team, and for half hour or 1 hour, we'd go through postmortem steps of timeline, what went well, what could have gone better, and follow up corrective measures. And one thing that was slightly difficult was actually convincing the product teams that we would actually need to do postmortems. So we actually need to allocate an hour to do the postmortems when defects happen. Fortunately, it was pretty easy to actually show the value in postmortems. So we were able to schedule these things pretty easily. So back to the diagram. The Q is the major critical incident, and the reward was learning from that mistake. The bad habit was one person assumes all responsibility for the incident and learns. And the good habit is team takes responsibility and learns. So we added a process to do the postmortems for all critical or major tickets. And we added facilitators to make sure this process was as easy as possible. And overall in the company, because we avoid one person from taking all the blame, it's contributed to the culture of blamelessness and learning. And we found that people still take blame, but teams have started to self-correct on this. So those are the three habits. I hope I've convinced you to start small and with individual habits that are part of your organization. Remember that the habit loop from before has three parts, the cue, routine, and the reward. And this helps in framing how you can actually change things. The cue and the reward can't change, but you can change the routine to get to the reward. So in review, getting buy-in to start your SRE team. You create a job description to align expectations. You create a roadmap to demonstrate the impact of the team. And you add an exit strategy just in case it's not the right time to implement SRE. And then here are the three habits. So first we looked at the habit of avoiding back channels, and we created a clear path to escalation and pushed to make these conversations happen in a more visible place. Then we changed the habit of relying on a single engineer, and we added playbooks as a way of sharing responsibility of handling incidents. Finally, we looked at the habit of assuming personal responsibility instead of one engineer learning from incident. We had the team learning from the incident, making more improvements on the team level. So you're probably wondering if I took the exit strategy, so I ended up taking it. And while no one is actively working on SRE at Meetup, they're actually still well being used, the three things I talked about. And I still have a job, but I'm still more focused on management right now. And just a final thought, during periods of great change, habits are very malleable. When there's potential for breakage, or it really matters to the company. If you want to affect change, do it when things are breaking or could potentially break. During my SRE pilot, Meetup was moving to AWS, switching to Jira, implementing microservices in GCP. So there's a lot of things that could potentially go wrong. With this environment and support from upper management, it will give you the opportunity to be on the path to SRE. So one more thing that I ask of you, when you go back to your company tomorrow, I want you to ask yourself, what is one best practice you can take away from SRECon 2017? And to get to that best practice, what habit are you going to change? Thanks.